Welcome to the seventh episode of the West Ham Way USA podcast. I'm your co-host Tony in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. On the other side, we have Brawley in St. Louis. What's going on, my man?
Hey, we won a game. How about that, huh?
I know. Welcome back. This is your first episode back after a while. Dan was with us last time we recorded for the Chelsea game. I was in Florida. I think you had some stuff going on. So here we are. The boys are back in town. 3 points, and I'm excited to do this tonight.
Yep. We decided not to do one after the Arsenal game. I mean, our schedule's kind of conflicted, but I think it was just going to be us moaning for an hour, and you could have played the same show after a couple of the other games, and I think we just decided better of it. So, guys, we are trying to get regular again, but it's much easier to podcast after a win, that's for sure. We're not fair-weathered fans. We're trying to do one every week, but we're just trying to get back to our usual selves and have a little bit more energy than we do in the past, huh?
Yeah, I would say so. I think the main issue we had Monday, on top of an agonizing loss, didn't feel like moaning. It was already a Monday night.
Yes.
We were already out of sync, and we were like, you know, fuck it, let's just not do it.
Monday night plays a big factor because me and you both have to work the next day, so it's definitely tough to record on weekday nights.
But otherwise, here we are on this Sunday night. Do we have any podcast business before we get into the actual game?
Yeah, I wanted to briefly mention that I have been talking with former Premier League referee and former guest of the show, Bobby Madley, about coming on again to give us a bit of VAR chat and just liven it up a little bit to dilute the just me and you every week. I know last week we got to hear from Dan, formerly of Danalytics, and he did a great job, but I'm sure people are getting tired of hearing just me and you talk. So
that would be another great high profile guest that we can get onto the podcast, and especially with all the drama that's going on with VAR that we will talk about in our game, but also around the league, especially like the Sadio Mane goal that was rolled out. Did you see that this weekend?
Oh God, yeah, it's ridiculous. I mean, it's a lot like in the first week of the season when we played Man City, Raheem Sterling, same thing, offside by an armpit. Again, it's not what it was brought in to do. Let's get into it later. I'll rant and rave about VAR a little later. I'll save that for the game talk.
Yeah, he's got a whole thing on that. So let's just move into the actual game.
But anyway, real quick, in a couple of weeks, sorry. Just look out for Bobby Madley to come on the show within the next couple of weeks, maybe within the next month. And I am working on a couple of other guests, a couple of former players, actually, that sound like they are very tempted to come on our show. And just got to catch them at the right time. So, guys, just stick with us. We're going to have some cool guests on in the next coming weeks. Now we can get into the game, Tony. Go ahead.
Okay, so back into the game. Pellegrini forced to finally make some changes in formation and personnel. What did you think of the lineup?
If I had a soundboard right now, I'd be playing the hallelujah, hallelujah. I don't know how on earth it's taken him this long. And I don't know if some injuries forced his hand on this because Anderson wasn't fit. I'm really curious. I would love to know if Anderson was fit, if he would have kept Allaire out of the team and started Antonio and played 4-5-1 like he has in the past. So, but either way, he plays 4-4-2. I've been saying this for weeks. I've been tweeting it. I've been saying it. Why on earth aren't we playing someone up front with Sebastian Allaire? Why not? And it finally happened.
Well, here's the thing. There was nothing to lose at this point. We had already lost all those other games playing that same formation. If we lost with the 4-4-2, who would have cared? At that point, who cares? Then you at least tried something different. You showed some passion.
And he would have been sacked.
Yeah, well either
way. Hopefully.
Either way, my point is there's nothing to lose. Absolutely nothing. But here we go. Now we have Antonio into the lineup playing striker with Allaire. That was exciting. I think this is one of the best games that we've seen Antonio play in weeks, in months, in the year. But on top of that, the way that he actually had some support, and poor Allaire, he finally had some support. That's why he was struggling. He was like, damn, I'm up here by myself. I have zero service. I'm played out of my normal position. Like, and then y'all expect me to score and have these high expectations on what, 45, 40 million pounds?
Yeah,
I would be frustrated if I was him. All those reports in the paper. So yeah, I get his frustration.
Totally. And like, Antonio isn't a center forward by trade. I mean, he even says his best position is right wing. But for him to play out of position and play as well as he did and just give some support to a fellow striker, I mean, that tells me everything I need to know about going forward. It's like, that's what we need to be playing. And once we get some bodies back, maybe Antonio can go back out wide on the right. We don't have any other forwards to play up there with him. Maybe Yarmolenko. He came on as a second striker late in the game. So I'm just excited to see Pellegrini, finally branch out into a 4-4-2. And what it doesn't make sense to me is he's played 4-4-2 in his whole career leading up to this. So I don't know why he's been so reluctant to go back to it unless he legitimately thinks we don't have any other strikers to play up there with him and Ayeti's crap. So
I want to bring up Antonio one more thing here on him. I just love his game and how explosive he is. He's not the most technical player. He's obviously, we know some of his shots that just go absolutely bananas. But he is so explosive when he gets the ball. I just vividly remember in my head that he just, how about the turn where he drew the foul? Or when he just pushed the ball down the whole line and just sprinted past the defender. I mean, he's just so energized and such a player that I want to see on the field. He provides something different than the rest of the team because everyone's so slow and doesn't cut around. Does that make sense?
Yeah, he scares defenders, and he's not afraid to actually take a defender on. And that's what we've been missing for so long. That's why Anderson's been struggling so much, because Anderson can't beat his man. He's slow. He's standing still doing all these little step-overs, and he can't dribble past anyone. And like, it's just so opposite of what we saw from him last season.
Oh, yeah. Well, you just took the words right out of my mouth. I was just ready to jump in and say that's the complete opposite of what we used to see from him. He used to be that explosive player like Antonio. Could you imagine Anderson at full form just mashing the ball past guys, Antonio on the other side? And then that would open up space for Sebastian Haller because the center backs would have to cheat over and help their outside backs. I mean, that's what we need to get back to doing. We need to get back to having everybody on top form, because here's the thing. Well, obviously, you know, that's a given. But the thing about it is your players will create space for other players. But when they don't have to cheat and help because Anderson's just sucking right now, they can double team somebody else like Haller.
Exactly. So I totally agree with you about Antonio. And it's just really nice. Like you said, that ball where he just kicks the ball 20 yards down the field and says, I'm going to beat you to this ball and you're not going to beat me to it. Like, that's exactly what I wanted to see out of our players. It's nice to see someone not scared to take on someone, to bully someone, to draw a foul on someone, just to get physical with someone. I don't know why I stuttered there. He had a couple of fouls that he committed himself just trying to get to the ball. But it's nice to see someone willing to get physical with a defender to try to win the ball and start to get a little nasty, because we're all playing like prima donnas and we're scared to get injured and we're scared to slide into a challenge. And it's nice to see someone willing to take the brunt and do the dirty work to finally get some results. And Antonio's doing that. And for me, he was my man of the match. So I'm thrilled with his performance.
He got beat up on Saturday. He got absolutely beat up all game on Saturday and still was running his socks off for every minute that he was in that game. Yeah. But there was also another bully on the field for us. How about the resurgence of Ogbonna?
He's been fantastic. Probably Hammer of the Year. That's who would get my vote.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even have an argument with that. That doesn't make good podcasting, but I'll tell you what. He has been incredible. It's just so nice to see. I mean, he literally got Diop out of his spot.
And, like, we had all written him off going into the season. Like, I wouldn't really care if we sold him going into the season. Like, he was crap last year. Like, but he offers something, like, from set pieces as well, though. He's the center back that's getting in there for the corners and the free kicks more so than anyone else. So I've been absolutely pleasantly surprised with the resurgence of Angelo Ogbonna this season, and praise him. Like, I have no words. I can't believe what he's done this season. Like, it's been unreal.
Yeah, I mean, I just have praise all to go around. That defensive line stood
even
strong.
With us losing, even when we've been losing, he's been solid. Like, he hasn't been bad in these games we've been losing.
Absolutely. I mean, and Balbuena played well again, you know, because it looked like it was going to be Ogbonna and Diop. And then now, because originally it was Diop and Balbuena, but now Balbuena had another great game, and here we go, another clean sheet.
Because Diop got suspended. That's the only reason this has happened, because Diop had the accumulation of yellows, so that's why Balbuena came in, and he's kept his spot since then. So I guess, should we get into the beginning of the game, though?
Yeah,
so
sure, start us off.
Where did you watch it? Well, or did you get to watch it?
Yeah, so I actually just watched on my couch by myself. I actually was watching the Sky feed this time, and then the second half I watched the NBC feed, so I got to just test out both of them. And NBC Sports, if you listen back to our Rebecca Lowe interview, at the beginning of the summer, she was explaining how Sky, that partnership has come together, and they're trying to almost merge and have identical vibes to them. So I thought it was really interesting to listen and watch both of those. Where did you watch this weekend?
I actually had a Saturday off work. I accidentally called the wrong day off of work, ironically enough. I meant to call off Sunday. I got off Saturday, and it worked out perfectly fine. So I went to the pub. I woke up, went down for the 9 a.m. games here in the central United States time zone. We have the 6:30 a.m., which is the lunchtime kickoff over there. Then we have the 9 a.m. kickoffs, which is your 3 p.m.s. And then the late games at 11:30. So I went up for the 9 a.m. games, watched with some of my Newcastle buddies. I had a friend from Chicago come down who's actually a Blues fan, and he was coming down for the Blues-Blackhawks game that we were going to go to together. So I met up with him, watched a Newcastle game with him. Newcastle lost 1-0 to Burnley, and it was a familiar feeling. And then I watched the West Ham game, at the pub with about six other West Ham fans and no Southampton fans, so it was nice.
So what was the vibe like amongst those six of you guys? Was it nervous at the start? Were you guys excited, saying, this is our bounce-back game? Were you like, oh my God, we're going to take another L? What was the vibe around the camp?
I can't speak for everyone else, but the vibe I got is that we're going to lose this game, and let's keep it close, because I thought going into the game we were going to lose ugly, given our last performance against Arsenal.
But here's the thing, we have a chance. Martin's in goal.
Yeah.
So
I love that chant. Like, if it's fantastic. And I think some people would vote for David Martin for Hammer of the Year right now.
Martin's in goal. It's perfect though, because it's upbeat. It gets everybody jumping. I absolutely love it as well.
Poor Roberto.
You know, could you imagine sitting there? I wonder if he cares, or if he's just like, yeah, here's my paycheck. Because imagine, you know, you had a terrible time, you get out replaced, and then this guy comes in and the fans just will not stop singing about him the whole time. I mean, what's your vibe sitting there? You're just like, damn, this shit sucks. You got to watch. And then he gets injured at the end of the game. Yeah. Well, he couldn't have come in because we were out of substitutions. But
yeah,
still.
I was wondering who was going to go on goal if Martin had to come off. I was wondering who was going to go on goal.
If you could take a guess, who would you have put in?
Oh, goodness gracious. Who do I think would be a good
Fredericks.
Goalkeeper? Maybe. Athletic, sure. I'd go for that.
Thinking like a sweeper keeper, fast, can run up and try and kick the ball. I'd put in Fredericks.
Yeah, him or Declan Rice, I was going to say, maybe. I don't know.
Declan's goofy. I bet you he would be a pretty good goalkeeper, just because he'd be like, you know what, I'm young, I'm going to try something, why not?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't that long ago we had someone from the outfield come in to play goal. I think, I want to say Henry Lansbury came in the championship season.
Jenkinson.
And Carl Jenkinson did, that's right. That is right. That was more recent.
My memory.
But I believe Henry Lansbury went in goal as well for us in the championship. So, yeah, we're on the way back machine in this game. But hopefully Martin's not seriously injured. And because if we have to see Roberto against Crystal Palace, I don't know. We have a week and a half before that, though, thank God, because the Liverpool game got postponed because they are in the
FIFA Club World Cup.
That's the Club World Cup, yeah. So we have basically a bye week this week.
Yeah, everyone's talking about, oh man, I'm glad we're going to have a game in hand. Our game in hand's against Liverpool. So
it's
not a game in hand.
It's not. Yeah, it's really not. If anyone says that, they're dumb.
Yeah. However, I think
watch us beat them. Watch us beat them. That would be the typical West Ham of this of just ever to beat Liverpool this season, wouldn't it?
And then lose to Watford the week after.
Yeah. Yep.
Exactly. I did see though. I believe that X said that Fabianski could be back for Palace.
That would be great. Don't rush him. Please don't rush him. We need him. But that would be amazing if he's ready to go.
Yeah, so because what our next few matches are Palace on Boxing Day, and then we have Leicester at home. Then we have Bournemouth at home. You guys will see me there. And then we have the FA Cup, which I will be at. So
yeah, that'll Gillingham be away. And it looks like we got a good allocation for Gillingham as well. So you should
2,600.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. However, I hope it doesn't rain. I saw their away end doesn't have a roof, so this is old school lower league football. I'm really excited for it, to be honest with you, because it'll be a new ground for me. Yeah, that'll take me to I believe 20 out of 92, so that's pretty fair, I believe.
You're not going to be are you going to be at Sheffield United away a couple days after that?
No, I couldn't swing that much time off work. I really couldn't even swing enough time off work for this trip, but, you know, it's happening anyway. So, yeah, Sheffield United is not going to happen for me.
So, okay, so in the first minute of the game, Declan Rice scores, and it's ruled out for being offside. So that set the tone straight away, though. I thought we had a really good start. That's the exact kind of start we wanted. It was the correct decision. He was offside. But really, really good to see us actually doing something from a set piece also, I thought.
Well, yeah, it's a change for once, you know. I feel like every game that we'll have Balbuena score a goal off a set piece, and then the next three or four games we'll just go on a set piece drought where we're not even threatening. I'm not saying you got to even score every time, but we won't even threaten.
Well, in this run, like every 50-50 we lose. Like when our effort's not there, as soon as we concede a goal, that's my biggest problem with this team right now, is as soon as we concede a goal, heads drop, and it's like game over, and we're done. So as soon as we concede a goal, we get set plays after that. Every 50-50, they want it more than we do, and we lose every header, and I don't understand it. So come off right off the bat, I thought we won a header. We scored from it. It was slightly offside. So that set the tone. I thought the first half we were dominant. We were rampant in the first half, the rest of the half.
It's funny because we, in my opinion, we were more threatening with our time on the ball. This week, compared to a lot of other weeks earlier in the season, we actually lost possession. The possession battle. It was 57-43 was the possession stats this week. But I feel like every time that we had the ball, we were in such a more threatening position that it didn't even feel like we lost the possession battle.
Yeah, I mean, that's West Ham, that we're never going to win possession battles. I think Pellegrini would like to. I think he's used to doing it, but possession battles for West Ham, and realistically, we're never going to win it. It is exactly what you said, is what you do with the possession when you have it. When you're just passing the ball along the back line for no purpose, with no purpose and no reason, you're just passing it to buy yourself time to look for something. Well, that's doing you no good because you're getting the defenders time to set up, and they're ready for anything you're going to throw at them. So that's number one thing I can't stand right now, is just passing it along the back line with no purpose. Now, looking at Arsenal, when they played us, that's what they did the entire first half and the beginning of the second half when they had the ball. All they were doing it was passing it from one wing back to the other with the center backs in between them with no purpose. So I can't stand that.
I'm okay with it as long as people up front are moving around trying to get open.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no point of hoofing it up there and moving the ball up the field if you're just going to lose it. But at the same time, if no one's moving around, which we have seen happen with this West Ham team plenty of times in the last few games, not moving around, not showing any desire or urgency, yeah, well, you got no one else to pass to, so you're going to have to put it across the back line.
Yeah, maybe that's fair enough. But getting into our goal, was there anything crazy that happened before our goal leading up to it? Do you remember?
No, I don't believe so. I think our goal just kind of finally came along there.
Antonio kept it in when I thought it went out. So I thought, great, VAR is going to overturn this again. Ball went out. Let's just regroup and go again. But it didn't. And how about the play of Pablo Fornals? He has been absolutely on fire recently. Nods it down for Allaire. Allaire is a really tough finish with his left foot, half volley, off the post and in. Fantastic finish, but I really wanted to highlight the play of Pablo Fornals on that play, because without him, that goal doesn't happen. And that's his, I believe, his third assist in three games before the fourth assist in three games, I think, actually.
Yeah, it just shows how unselfish he is. I think, and you know why I want to say it was almost a, was it foreshadow? Do you remember in one of the first few games where he should have just shot the ball on like the last minute of the game?
Yeah, Villa. Villa.
Instead, he lays it off. Well, he did it this time, and it worked out. So, you know, it's almost a foreshadow that seems to be like an unselfish player. And finally, it's coming on. And maybe we just needed to give him more time, us as a fan base. You know,
definitely.
We saw him as 20 million pounds, forgot how young he is, even though Declan's young as well. He's been playing in England. Fornals just comes in and struggles. The pace of the game, the passing, the movement, all that wasn't there. Now here we are, and he's getting some assists and moving the ball around. He is stepping up where Lanzini, A, has been injured, and B, when he came back from his injury, just wasn't doing.
Yep, Fornals over Lanzini for the time being all day long, and it's just really good to see. But yeah, isn't it really nice to see Allaire score again? Like, imagine that. He gets a ball in the box that he can shoot with, and he scores. Shocker. Color me shocked. Sounds like Chicharito, doesn't it?
But that's what we said at the beginning of the podcast, though, is you can't be mad at him. And I think there's a lot of people who are saying, well, he's just not getting himself in positions. I just don't think he's had the service when he was in the matches.
Yeah, I think his effort was lacking, too, but I can, like, maybe his effort. I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but his motivation maybe is not there, and you can kind of understand that when he's just not, when he's got nothing to latch on to. All he can do is hold it up and wait for help, and by the time that happens, the ball's gone.
There's this lady on the American Hammers Facebook page that really just annoys me so much. I'm going to be completely honest with you. She's extremely annoying. Because one of the things that she does is she was saying, well, you know, he doesn't celebrate, or he doesn't seem like he's trying. Well, yeah, he doesn't. Because I'd be frustrated too if I feel like I was the blame for the last 5 weeks of not winning. And then if you actually do watch the replay, he did celebrate.
He did. He went over and ran and celebrated with the subs. It was good to see Diop and Masuaku get up and go hug him, and they were celebrating with him.
He was celebrating and smiling. So, you know, I just think people just want to try and find one thing to be mad about all the time, when in reality, just try to enjoy it. That's what I tried to do. I mean, even on our rant podcast the last few weeks, I've just tried to at least enjoy it a little bit, trying to find some sort of positive, even though it was extremely hard. Because it's like what I always say, you know, if you're not going to try and enjoy West Ham, if you're just going to follow West Ham to moan, well, then you're just wasting your time, because you're going to do a lot of moaning.
Yep, exactly. And I agree with you 100%. And he definitely did celebrate, so I don't know what that person...
Yeah.
I haven't seen what you're talking about, but I don't know why on earth that would have been said. But, I mean, whatever. He scored. He did celebrate, so that's all that matters to me.
Anyway, we go in the halftime 1-0. Thank God. I was actually excited. However, I saw a funny post on Twitter. Someone also said, now, I guess this is negative and I'm laughing, so here I am being a hypocrite. But they were also saying that, you know, the game's going to end 3-1 and they're going to be miserable just like the Arsenal game. So who knows?
And before we go into the second half, one thing I completely forgot to go over was Antonio and Heller in the 25th minute absolutely assaulted in the penalty area. Antonio clotheslined around the neck, gets taken down, and then Haller gets absolutely chopped down. There should have been two penalties given on the play, and instead, nothing's given on the pitch. It goes to VAR, and how on earth this isn't clear and obvious, I simply do not understand how there wasn't one foul, an obvious foul, in the penalty area given. We should have had a penalty, and that should have been 1-0, and Noble would have stepped up and scored. I cannot, for the life of me, figure out how on earth those people at Stockley Park have not seen that that's a penalty. I can't understand it.
That's a foul anywhere else on the field.
100%. Two fouls.
Two fouls, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, the fullback absolutely clips Allaire, and the center back has WWE chokeslammed Antonio. So I genuinely do not understand how that wasn't a penalty. And they sat there and looked at it like 50 times.
For a long time, yeah.
But this isn't the first time that we should have had a penalty shout, Allaire, earlier in the season. And yeah, the VAR people even admitted. They're like, yeah, you know, we got that one wrong. So yeah. This would have been the perfect time for some vengeance and correction or retribution or whatever you want to say to correct this. And it just was blatantly wrong.
And here, I guess I'm just going to get into my VAR thoughts now. You know, we were both all for VAR going into the season. Like,
that's true.
If it's properly enforced and it gets out the clear and obvious mistakes, then I am all for it. And I have completely and utterly changed my stance on VAR going into this point. If it were me and I were in charge of it, and I don't think this is realistic, but I would scrap it today. Like, I would just get rid of it, keep the goal line technology, but it has to go because there are far too many subjective decisions being made by human beings, and they are not fixing the correct and obvious calls. For instance, we covered one, Sadio Mane against Watford, or I think it was against Watford this weekend, offside by an armpit hair.
But that's not the law for that one. The law for offside's not clear and obvious. That's only for penalty decisions.
No. You're correct. I'm just saying VAR as a whole are making all of these crazy microscopic decisions and it's ruining the game. So, yeah, you're right. Clear and obvious does not apply to offside. Now, there needs to be changes to the offside, and they need to make those lines thicker, and they need to make their be able to have daylight in between the two. Not when they're right up against each other. Like, there needs to be clear daylight in between the lines. So they need to widen those lines out a good margin. And if there is space in between those two lines, that's when it's offside. Not these microscopic decisions. It's terrible. There's no advantage gained from Sadio Mane's position or Raheem Sterling's position against us early in the season. There's no advantage there. That's what I'm trying to get rid of. If someone's cheating by gaining an advantage, being ahead of the defender, that's when offside is applied. Not when these microscopic toenail and armpits are being overturned great goals.
The problem with that is that gray zone just grows and grows and grows by your theory. So I guess I have two suggestions for VAR. The first one is A, limit the VAR to a challenge system where you can only use it if you have a VAR challenge in the bank. I think that would then eliminate anyone. It's stopping every single time for something that you think is either necessary or unnecessary. I think if you had a challenge system. The second change I would do is have it like cricket, where there's umpire's call, where the call in the field stands and you retain your review. So, for example, the Sadio Mane incident, or all these ones that there's no daylight. I agree. Like you said, there's no daylight. It's just line on top of line. Well, to me, then that should be stay with whatever the call is on the field. That would be umpire's call. There's enough margin of error that it is acceptable for the umpire, for the assistant referee, to miss that call. It's almost like in NFL where the call stands is not confirmed.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I could go along with that. But my suggestion is definitely, you got to widen those lines and you got to have daylight. That's what my suggestion is. Now, go ahead if you want to chime in.
Well, I was going to say I think the frustrating thing for me also about VAR is you have the situation like Antonio where they got the correct call. It was the correct call. The rule is bad. The rule is bad. The rule is absolutely bad. The whole like there's no intent. The ball clearly was kicked at his hand. He was had it right in front of him. It didn't gain any specific advantage. To me, that was a bad rule, a good call. But here we are, VAR. The VAR monster gets us. Whether it was the correct call or not, I'm not arguing that. Well, I think it is the correct call. I just think it's, of course, it happened to us.
But and I'd be saying if it didn't happen, if it didn't go against us on that goal.
Well, you have a few times this season where you're like, yeah, we benefited from it, but it was still stupid.
Well, yeah, well, like the Raheem Sterling one. Like, I said when that happened, I cannot believe that wasn't a goal. like I that blew my mind, and it's been on a downhill spiral since then for me. But that Antonio decision where the ball grazes his hand, you took absolute ecstasy away from those 3,000 West Ham fans. That's what football's about. Like, you took that away because of a minuscule. In the first two replays, I didn't even see it hit his hand. It's only when they slowed it down and zoomed in on his hand that you could see it grazed his hand. Like, you're killing the game with these decisions. Like, all of those fans there are an absolute jubilation and ecstasy and absolute limbs going mad in the away end. And then you take that away and it's only 1-0 again. And, like, for me, this is not what I had in mind when VAR was coming into this league. And I'm regretting it more and more every single day. And it's driving me up a wall. I can't stand it.
I gave my two suggestions, but I just don't think I have the full solution, because in my head, VAR was brought in to eliminate the example of the Liverpool goal last year.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Where the guy was Milner, clearly
3 yards offside.
3 yards. I mean, the size of my desk is sitting here, and he was offsides. I mean, clear as day. I mean, there was memes that they drew the offsides line and then did a little circle, half circle around him to keep him on side. You know what I'm saying? That's what it was there to fix. But these eensy-weensy half hair, it's still, quote-unquote, the correct call. It's just, is this really what it's about? But then, again, it's a slope. Where do you say, okay, this is okay and this is not okay? And then you're going to have that line again. This is almost okay. Yeah, I just don't have a solution.
I have a bit of a solution. I think your challenge system's a good idea. Like that could help. I think my suggestion of the offsides line being thicker, and there has to be at least, and I don't know how, I'm not technologically like savvy, so I don't know how you do it, but like, there has to be, like, on that screen, there has to be, like, a centimeter of daylight where you see green in between the two lines.
I got like it. What about, like, goal line technology, where you have to see daylight in between the ball and the goal line?
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't know how you do that, and I don't know. Like, it seems like the game's trending to where you're not going to have linesmen anymore. You're going to have these cameras running up and down the sidelines, and they're going to be the ones that a robot flag goes up when it's offside. And I don't think that's what the game's about either. But you could do it. I'm sure that technology's there where you could get rid of linesmen in the Premier League and you could have a robot linesman. And I don't want that. I do not want that at all.
No, we need to make sure that that doesn't happen. However, we have to have Dan back on in the future, maybe in a few weeks, because he had a extremely spicy hot take saying that he doesn't think there should be referees anymore. So I would Dan, I love you, but I'm not sure I agree with that. I believe it was Dan, so maybe I don't want to slander who, if it wasn't Dan. But somebody said that, and I would really like to hear that opinion again.
That would make me sick to my stomach. Like, the game's gone if that happens. Anyway, I have some other suggestions too that I wanted to
all
bring
right,
up.
Let's hear those suggestions so we don't get stale here. Let's keep it moving.
Yeah. So I think the referees need to be mic'd up, not like a live mic, but I think they need to be mic'd up to where later on you can hear what the conversations they were having. And they do need to have a hot mic like the NFL does in explaining these decisions. So not just a screen saying VAR decision, no goal. There needs to be that comes up on the screen, and then the referee comes on the loud system and the PA and says, the ball's hit Mikel Antonio's hand. Therefore, West Ham, therefore it's no goal and it's a free kick to Southampton.
And just a FYI, they already, and I'm sure you already know this, they already do that in England with cricket when the third umpire comes on. And then they also do that with rugby. So, and we already know they do that in the NFL. So I don't see why they couldn't do that with soccer, football.
The fans in the stadium get fucked by VAR. And I haven't been to a game in 2 years. And I am on their side with this. It drives me insane that these guys have no idea what's going on. They're paying their hard-earned money. They're traveling hundreds and hundreds of miles with their own petrol and their own gas in their cars to go see these teams play home and away. So they should be looked after more than anyone. I don't give a shit if all the money's in the TV revenue, but these fans who actually make the atmosphere at the game so your TV audience can have an atmosphere, those people need to be looked after, and not just the people sitting at home on the couch like me and you.
Yeah.
Well, you go to games, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, so I got to experience VAR live at the Brighton game earlier in the season. I don't remember if it happened in the Palace game when I was at that one. I can't remember off the top of my head, but it
Brighton
happened.
Had a goal ruled out, right?
Yes,
if I remember correctly.
Yeah, so it happened at the Brighton game I was at.
It was a blur in Vegas,
and yeah, and it was just a weird, subdued, like it was just odd. If they would have just shown the replay on the screen and or were talking to us as the referee, it wouldn't have been as awkward and weary and just eerie. It was bizarre. It was this weird feeling. I think if they would show and speak while they're making these decisions, I think it would be a completely different vibe around VAR. Because if you have somebody telling you, oh, yeah, you know, this is how we came to this decision, you know, this is the rule book, and hey, sorry if you don't like it, sorry if it's too strict, but this is what we're supposed to do, I think it would be a whole different story.
Well, take, for example, the Bobby Madley incident against Bournemouth. Had West Ham fans heard that explanation, I think it would have been a lot less toxic and like abuse. Like at least we can understand like, okay, he's a human being. They've gone over, they've discussed it. I haven't seen it hit Callum Wilson and the ball went in. I didn't see it hit him. To me, it looked like it went straight in. Therefore I can't give a decision that I haven't seen. Oh, that makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, we might be pissed at him for not seeing it, but it makes sense. You'd be like, oh, yeah. Okay, well,
you can understand.
Yeah. So
that's all I want. Like, for me, we need consistency. My bullet points are daylight on VAR, obvious fouls in the area. Don't just stick with the referee because it's the polite thing to do and you don't want to screw over one of your colleagues. Like, that was a missed call. And there's two guys that go down to get tackled in the area. Don't defend your guy. Let's get the right decision. That's what it was brought in to do. And in that case, it didn't happen. And three, we need explanations. We need to know what's going on. We need to know why these decisions are being made. And I think that will clear up a lot of nastiness that's gone on. It's just too inconsistent, and we're just sucking the joy out of the game for people. So that's my halftime VAR chat. If you guys, I would love to hear your thoughts on VAR. The listeners, tweet us, email us. I don't care. I'd love to hear you guys. And I would love to have a more in-depth VAR discussion with the listeners, especially when we have Bobby Madley on so he can give us his views and we can kind of ask him questions. So, Tony, I don't know if you have anything to add. What's your position? If you could today, right now, on December 15th, 2019 at 8:33 p.m. in the middle of the Premier League season, if you had something you could do for VAR right now, what would you say to do?
I would keep it. I like that they're getting the correct calls. I think it does take away from some of the scenes. I completely agree. At the same time, I think I would rather have the correct call in the long run. I would say I would do either a challenge system or an umpire's call where it stays on the field because the call stands rather than confirmed, just like the NFL. That's the only thing I would do.
Okay, fair enough. I'd scrap it today and...
Well, we
maybe give it another year, and then if it's perfected by then, fine. But for me right now, I have completely 180 on my VAR decision, and I apologize to anyone who I discussed with and said you were wrong in the past or wanting the right decision. That's what I wanted to, but it doesn't sit well with me right now, and for me it's killing the game. So we can go into the second half now.
Well, we already talked about that penalty shot. I think the only other thing I wanted to really speak about in the second half, unless you have something else, was Southampton had a goal, quote-unquote, ruled out. When we dispossessed the player, the Southampton player, they got it back and shot into the top right corner. Martin was
great
beat.
Finish.
Fantastic finish. However, just before he shot the ball, the referee did call for a foul. I swear I thought that was a little bit soft. So I will give him that, but also at the same time, when that ball hit the back of the net, I was like, yep, that's about right.
Well, I still haven't seen a good replay of that decision. I saw it once live at the game, or live when the game was going on, and I thought, I didn't, I was like, I don't know that I saw a foul there. So I didn't know what the referee had seen there, and I thought maybe the camera was in the wrong spot or something. If it was Fredericks that I believe that it was that he got called the foul on, I think it was probably a very soft and maybe even the incorrect decision, and Southampton maybe even got robbed, and we got lucky with one there. But it was a Danny Ings fantastic finish. And I couldn't hear really the commentators because I was at the pub. So when I saw it hit the back of the net, I was like, fuck. And I went to the bathroom because I was just so pissed. So I was like, yeah, that's typical.
Yeah. So I don't really have anything else on the game specifically. We have a few touching points that I want to take a quick break. But I do want to add one more thing about VAR. Just one more thing about VAR. I know we're going back into it. Bear with for 1 second. What game was it earlier in the day? Oh, it was the Chelsea-Sheffield game where VAR saved Sheffield. When he was clearly onside, the play went across, the ball went across the line, goal line technology, he was clearly onside, flicks it over the goalkeeper into the net, and Sheffield won. You know, obviously I dislike Sheffield, and I wish that I was kind of pulling for Chelsea just because I want Sheffield to drop in the table, and we have no chance at catching Chelsea. However, that this is why I want to keep VAR, is for that scenario.
That definitely fits.
Which matches the Liverpool game almost.
If you were making a case like to keep VAR, that would be right up there at the top of the list for the reasons to keep it. If you had to make a montage,
your close line. Sorry to jump on top of you. I'm just saying, like, it wasn't even close. Where you know how you were saying, oh well, you know, maybe he was onside, maybe he was offside. That was clear. And that was like, damn, he was well onside. So that's why I say that we still need to keep it, because it was situations like that and situations like Liverpool last year against us where it's just blatantly like, how did you miss that?
Yeah, definitely. If you were making an argument for keeping VAR and you had to present it to someone, that clip would be right up at the top of the list for reasons why you'd want to keep it. So you are right. That was a instance where VAR helped. And there have been a few of those this year. I'm just saying, in my opinion, the bad is outweighing the good to me. And I'm not even talking just from like a West Ham perspective. I'm like around the league. Even there have been some decisions that we have benefited from where I've been like, that does not sit well with me. And it's killing the fans of the game.
Question for you, though. Do you think once we're used to it, it would be, and it's normalized? No. Do you think it would get better? Like, think about the NFL for a second. Again, that's a stop and go sport, though. So, but just
different, yeah.
And I wasn't alive when they did all the replays and stuff, or maybe I was. I just don't remember it. Do you think it was weird at first for them, and they got used to it, and they're like, "Yeah, we needed this." Or do you, or is it always a great thing for the NFL?
No, I mean, yeah. Think about this
new pass interference rule. I know this is not an NFL podcast, but for 2 extra minutes, we're going to go NFL here. The pass interference challenge rule.
I hate it.
Absolutely stupid.
And it's only because the Rams benefited from it, and it took a team out of the Super Bowl, so they're trying to correct that from ever happening again. I think that's going to go away this year. So I know it's a one-year thing, and I think that pass interference challenge is going to go away. It's too subjective.
Right, so relate it back to VAR.
Yeah.
Do you think VAR goes next season? Do you think it stays or goes? I'm not asking if you want it to stay or go. Do you think on the record it stays or goes?
It probably stays, and it'll probably be here for the long-term future. All I'm saying is, like, I want the correct decision also. Don't get me wrong. That's ultimately what anyone wants. No one wants to get fucked by the refs. However, for whenever football has been a sport, the reason you go to the games, and maybe I'm speaking for myself and not everyone, but the reason you go to the games is you want that little taste of just pure happiness, like unbridled joy when your team scores in the 92nd minute to win it, even just to score at any time in the game. But yeah, you go for that when you're just tackling people you've never met in your life, and you're hugging your friends, and you're going absolutely berserk. And now you're not sure whether you should celebrate it or not until the VAR check is complete. That for me is what is so wrong with VAR at the moment. And it hurts me to watch these games now and see that be taken away from even me at the pub, like giving it to someone. Like, we scored against Chelsea and I'm giving it to the Chelsea fans. And all of a sudden, I'm not sure whether I should be celebrating or not, or if I need to wash my mouth until the VAR check is complete, because like, it's just, for me, it's just killing the game and it's killing the fans in the game. And I'm done with it. I wanted to see it go away, because we shouldn't be sitting here talking about VAR. We should be talking about the game.
But we're not.
So, and no one is.
No, no one is. So that is the end of that portion. I think we should take a quick break, regroup, and finish the podcast strong.
So we do not have a Q&A section this week. We decided that our VAR discussion was going to take up probably the same amount of time. So the Q&A section will be back next week. One thing we haven't really talked about, and I didn't get to listen to the whole show with you and Dan, so apologies for that. But one thing we haven't really talked about all that much is the manager. Me and I don't think I know I haven't said it on this podcast, and I'm not sure about yourself, but I have not said Pellegrini out yet to this point. And so, I'm not sure. Did you and Dan talk about that last week?
We definitely talked about it. I said a phrase. I call it Pellegrini on a break. Where I don't want him in or out. I really don't know. I think he is really not getting it done, even though we won. I still think the performance, the players were still a little eh. I thought we had some guys that came through, but I really think that we should be beating a relegation side more than 1-0, even if it's on the road.
And we did score a second in his defense that should have counted, in my opinion.
Yeah.
We had other chances, but Southampton also had a goal ruled out, so it could have been 2-1. So, yeah, you can look at it different ways.
I just think, for me, one of the things about it was we've yet to bury these teams. And that's what Mark Noble said in a Sky Sports interview the other day. I believe it was right after the game, where he was talking about our home form, where the second goal hasn't came. Yeah. Where we dropped points against Sheffield up 1-0, dropped points at the Palace game I was at when we were up 1-0, lost 2-1. There was a plenty of games where Arsenal game up 1-0, lost 3-1, where the second goal hasn't came. So back to the manager, you know, we did win this weekend, and he had some key injuries, but at the same time, as a manager with his experience and his caliber and his financial wage, in my opinion, we should be sitting higher than 15th, even with our win. So we're sitting 15th in the table right now. I'm going to let you go here. We with 19 points, just above the relegation zone, which is 15. And Everton, funny enough, are right below us at 18 points, and they're 16th. So I guess that's why I say I'm Pellegrini on a break, where I just don't know. I don't think he deserves a new contract. I think he's been extremely poor. But at the same time, every team goes on a run, and I wouldn't want him to get – I don't want to wait to sack him when it's too late, almost like we did with Avram Grant. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So, I mean, as of right now, we're 3 points off 9th, and we're 6 points off 7th. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to say one more thing, because there's a lot of platforms out here calling for his head. I don't think we've publicly, or at least on Twitter, have said out.
I haven't.
Because I want to back the team and back the manager, not to be a board ass licker, because I think the board is actually at the blame here as well, with the toxic culture around this club, all the way down to affecting the fans. But I'm still not sure that sacking him is worth the investment. I mean, you sack him, that's what, $15 million, as you explained to me, that doesn't all go to him. Some of it's his backroom staff.
It's less than that too. I think it's more like $8 million too. Okay. I think is what we've come out to find.
Well, let's just say it's eight. Okay, that's still £8 million
An Albion, a Yeti, is what that is.
Well, it's okay, but it's still out of the transfer budget, because they're not going to say
his first name. Is it Albion? Is that his first name? How do I not know this?
Yeah, I have no idea. That's terrible. Call him a Yeti. I literally just call him a Yeti. But then the other thing is, so then on top of that, who are you going to bring in? There's literally nobody out there that I would be like, yeah, this is realistic. You're not paying for Rafa's release clause, whatever that is. And then the Bayern guy, everyone's like, oh, let's get Kovac. Is that how you say it?
Kovac, yeah.
Kovac from Bayern. You know, Nick's going to kill me for my Balkan mispronunciation there. But here's the thing with that is, okay, he was at Bayern Munich. He's not going to just come over to West Ham. The only thing about Pellegrini difference there is he was in China. He's like, yeah, I'll just come back to the Premier League. So there's no realistic people out there. Eddie Howe, why? I don't know why he's sitting there.
I don't think you're going to get him mid-season, though. You might be able to get him at the end of the season, or if he gets sacked. But
right, and I don't see him being Sean the guy to – I think he's a smart manager. I just don't see him being the guy to dig us out of a hole. If anybody's going to dig us out of a hole, it's going to be Sean Dyche. And I don't see him leaving because he's sitting pretty good mid-table with Burnley, even though they're only 2 points ahead of us. I just think the whole situation's fucked because there's nobody to get, but Pellegrini's not getting it done. Okay, yeah. Sorry. Now you go.
For me, I've been getting slowly and slowly more fed up with him. My biggest tipping point for me was when I screamed in the microphone for an hour about him playing Pablo Zabaleta against Alan Saint-Maximin, and that is where I really started to question everything he was doing. Why on earth it took him this long? And had he not played a 4-4-2 this week, I would have been calling for his head. And I'm not ready to call for his head yet. I'm all for if there's a better alternative out there. Okay, let's get him out and get someone else in. But I'm not there saying I think we need to sack him right this second. I'm just not there yet. I think your point of who else are we going to get, I think that's very valid. I'm sick of playing the David Moyes game for 6 months and the Sam Allardyce game for 6 months. And these guys aren't going to want to come anymore. You pissed David Moyes off. It's like he's going to want assurances that he's going to be there past this year. Like, I'm tired of playing the six-month game. I don't want to do that. As long as we're not going to go down, as long as we're not in a threat to go down, I think he needs to see the rest of the season out. And I know there are lots and lots and lots and lots of people that disagree me with this. But the second we start flirting with that relegation, if we dip into that bottom three, and it's any later than this right now, then we need to have a serious look. But as you said, who are we going to get this time of the year? I just don't know. So that's why I'm not prepared to call for his head at this moment in time. He played a 4-4-2. He did what I wanted. His substitutions still make my head, my ears bleed, like bringing off Carlos Sanchez for Sebastian Haller. Bringing off Haller and bringing on Sanchez. Like, my jaw dropped to the floor. Like, what? Like, I get you're trying to close up shop, but bring on Issa Diop then.
Carlos
Sanchez is shit.
Yeah, well, there's no debating that on this podcast. But my, if you think about the board, though, we thought Pellegrini was supposed to be the guy, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
Probably, he arguably has the best resume that a West Ham manager in recent history would have had.
Yeah, ever, okay? Probably, yeah.
He was backed with the most money that we've spent ever.
Ever, yeah.
So all these people saying, oh, well, Tony, you asked the board to spend, and they did. Correct? Did they? They did. Yeah. So the point I'm trying to get at is they didn't spend wisely. Who cares if they spent? They have a manager they said was the guy. He's not the guy, whether it's his fault or not. Maybe he is to blame, but they hired him. You know, if I do a bad job at my job, the person who's hired me also gets in trouble. Because they found a guy who's shitty at their job. So I think my main issue with Pellegrini and the board is they picked a guy who's not getting it done. They spent money on players that are not getting it done, whether he picked them or Huselius or whatever the fuck his name is, whether he picked them or not. We have all these things that aren't lined up, but one person's in charge at the top. All these issues in the last 7 years have the same people at the top, whether you put in millions of dollars or pounds, put in brand new managers with great experience, there's one person at the top, and it's that board, who are toxic.
That's fair, and I can't argue with that. It's just, yeah, the stadium has really thrown the biggest wrench into things, and it just seems like we're not the same anymore. I'm not going to go into this whole board discussion, but
this is supposed to be a manager last minute part of the podcast. Here I am bringing up the board, and what I just mentioned, none of that even included the stadium. That just had to do with the manager and players. So
yeah,
if I had to get
a new manager in, I would take a hard look at Rafa Benitez. I understand. It's the same thing as what we just did. It's a guy who just went off to China for a paycheck. I still think at least he hasn't been gone for 3 years. He's been gone for 6 months, and he did an amazing job with Newcastle. Now maybe Steve Bruce has made that job he did look less significant because Steve Bruce is actually doing okay with Newcastle at the moment. So I'd look at Benitez. I would look at Unai Emery. I don't know how realistic that is, but I would at least bring him in for an interview if he's interested. Obviously, we would go crazy for Ancelotti or Pochettino, but that's never, ever, 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 ever going to happen. So we need to be looking. So if it's not going to be Benitez and it's not going to be Emery, I'd be looking at I would take a hard look at Lee Bowyer down at Charlton. I think he's been doing a really good job. He's a West Ham guy. He's played for the club. I'd look at the Cowley brothers. Now, they have a small sample size at Huddersfield, but they've been starting to turn the ship around. So if you wanted to go young and up and coming, I think those guys are people that you should look at. But for me, I give Pellegrini probably these next. So these next games are huge. So the Arsenal game, I was right there at my edge. I was right there. And this game, he played 4-4-2, and he started to win me back. So if we don't take at least 4 points from the next two games, I think he probably needs to go. I'm giving him two more games. But like I tweeted before, I cannot stand this idea coming from the board of you have one game to save your job. Like, I hate it. Like, you know right now, if you're not feeling good, the extreme example is Watford. I'm sorry I'm rambling, but the extreme example is Watford. They've sacked two managers this year, and we're not even to Christmas yet. Like, that's the far extreme. Now, the other extreme, the other end, are your Bournemouths and your Burnleys, where they're pretty much not going to get sacked no matter what they do as long as they don't go down. We need to be pushing further towards Watford than we are right now. I mean, we need a decision. Now, if the board genuinely is not about money, like they have faith in the guy, then okay, give him to the end of the season as long as we don't go down. But if we finish in 17th, 16th, 15th, then he probably needs to go. So I'm so torn on what to say right now. Like I am really torn on this.
I am making my official stance. If we don't get 7 points by Friday the 10th against Sheffield, so that would be two wins and a draw against Crystal Palace, Leicester, Bournemouth, and Sheffield. If we don't get two wins and a draw out of that, he needs to go. Leicester's super hot. Palace, we should be able to play them tough. The Leicester game is going to be extremely tough, but we're at home. You know, I think we should be able to take it to them. Same with Bournemouth. They're mid-table. That'll be a massive mid-table game. And then Sheffield, they're sky high. But again, we on paper have a better side, in my personal opinion, than Sheffield, Bournemouth, and Palace. I think we should be taking 7 to 9 points from those four games. If he does not, we are going to be in some serious trouble. And that's all I have left to say. Do you have anything else for this podcast? Because now I'm wound up, and this was a positive podcast.
I just have one more thing I want to add. So what I'm trying to say is, the board either need to come out and say Pellegrini is our man and we're sticking with him until the end of the season, or they need to sack him. And if I'm tired of playing this middle, I just cannot stand. They have the Southampton game to save their job. So if we would have lost, he would have been gone. It's like you either know he's your guy or you don't.
You either trust him or you don't.
Yeah, so all I'm saying is I want a firm decision, and I just cannot stand when they have this idea of he has this game to save his job, because I just don't think that works. But anyway, I think that just about does it for this episode.
Yeah, that's it for me. Take us out on the stuff that I always mess up.
So we do not have a game next week. Like we said before, Liverpool are in the FIFA Club World Cup, so our game has been postponed against Liverpool. So I don't know if we're going to have an episode next week. If Bobby Madley does want to come on and he has next week available, we might do that. We might do a VAR special next weekend. But if not, we will be back after the Crystal Palace game. And yeah, that'll be it. So you can find us on Twitter at West Ham Way US Pod. You can send us an email if you want to. If you have some questions or Anything that you want to ask over email, feel free to shoot us an email at the West Ham Way USA podcast at gmail.com. Please, guys, if you would go onto the iTunes page and leave us a 5-star review. Send us some kind words. That just helps us reach more people. That's really all we want to do. For now, we are signing off. Tony Clark in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I am Brawley Darbin in St. Louis, Missouri. Also, by the way, I got to see the St. Louis Blues come back from 3-0 in the third period to beat the hated Chicago Blackhawks 4-3 in regulation. So that was a great day. I went to the pub in the morning and went to the Blues Blackhawks game that night. It was fantastic. So I just wanted to rub that in for any Hawks fans listening. 2019 Stanley Cup champs. Anyway, guys, that's it for this week. We'll talk to you next week. See you later. Bye-bye.
Come on, you Irons.